If you're enjoying this audiobook, you should know that this week I launched the Kickstarter for book 2 in the series, Salt in the Seas. If you want to be among the first to read it, go to tinyurl.com/saltintheseas to back the project and get your copy. You are listening to the serialized audiobook podcast for Blood of the Stars, an epic fantasy novel written by Corinne Norton, read by Peter Franson and Corinne Norton. If you can't wait to listen to the whole audiobook, or if you want a signed physical copy, go to corinnenorton.com/shop to get the lowest cost by buying direct. You can also find the audiobook on Audible, Barnes & Noble, and other standard retailers. Please enjoy the next installment of Blood of the Stars by Corinne Norton. Chapter 87. Her mother's screams made Eliana turn back, but Lukai was already bent over Emerus, calming her out of her distraught state while assessing her wounds. Blood seeped across her white dress, new spots forming as fast as Lukai could address them.
"How is she still hurting you?"
Lukai asked.
"It's not her."
The mumbled words coming from her mother's lips made Eliana seek out Durakin's form as he disappeared around the west side of the cliffs. Where would he take Mavis? And what would he do to her? She bit her lip. Was her mother right? Was she dying because Mavis was dying? Because Durakin was killing her? She scanned the balcony, which seemed oddly quiet now that Durakin and Mavis were gone, taking her dark spirits and windstorm magic with her. Velden was bent over Iris, who was back on the ground, but moving and talking. She should be fine. Loud sobs tore through the air from the eastern edge of the balcony, where Brogdon's arms were wrapped around Jasperus. Silmar's beady gaze watched both Brogdon and the other remaining soldier, who had dropped his weapons and allowed Cyrus to bind his wrists.
"Are you all right?"
Garen's spoken question echoed in Eliana's mind, a strangely comforting sensation instead of the invasiveness she'd expected.
"I think so."
Her hands still shook, and her legs threatened to give out, but she was mostly intact. She should be thrilled at the turn of events. Durakin had just solved their problems with one clamp of his jaw.
"I'd feel better if I could see evidence that she's truly gone."
Garen screwed up his face.
"You've seen what Durakin's capable of. I think it's safe to say Mavis is dead. Or will be soon."
"That's not—" she cut off, glancing at her mother once more. If what she'd said was true, it might not be something for Eliana to share. Not even with Garen.
"Then we should remove your brand."
He winced as he ran a hand through his hair.
"Sorry about that."
"No."
She placed a hand on his arm, waiting until he caught her gaze.
"You needed to do it. I needed your help.
Thank you for being willing." He nodded, then pulled her dagger from her sheath. Without hesitation, he sliced at the mark on his hand, his face screwing up in either concentration or pain. Sweat poured down his temple, and Eliana took pity on him, pulling the dagger from his hand so she could finish the job. While she worked, she let the magic in her blood flow through her fingers, healing his wound as she went. Tendrils of temptation wove up from his blood, more like a whisper in the back of her mind than the shouts she used to hear. As the last of the brand was cut out,
she felt the ties between them break. It should have been a relief, but a small part of her longed for the connection. Garen rubbed the raw spot she'd left behind, the skin a shiny white and bright pink over a lump of flesh. It was almost as if he missed the connection, too. "I can try to smooth out the scars more in a couple days, but you might be better off having Lukai do it, or even Marnok, if we can find him." She didn't want Garen to suggest what it might mean that the others had never caught up.
"This type of scar can't be healed. It's its own branding mark, a warning that I use blood magic."
She couldn't help reeling back. "So I'll have the same when I remove Durakin's brand?" He nodded.
"Although you should keep that for a bit, at least to have a sense of where he is, especially if you want confirmation that Mavis is dead."
She swallowed hard, not liking the practical truth in his words. "Thank you, Garen, for doing something you hate so much, when you could have just killed me." His laugh came out strangled.
"You hear how backwards that sounds, right?"
She grinned back, but her mother's moans made her turn.
"I can't keep up with whatever's injuring her,"
Lukai said. Aeliana kneeled to help him. Between the two of them, they managed to stay on top of the wounds, but they still kept appearing, as if some phantom dagger kept plunging through her side. The others helped move her to the bed in one of Mavis's rooms, where Iris was placed beside her in order for Velden to set her broken arm and bind her cracked ribs. Garen lit several lanterns, placing them throughout the room before approaching Brogdon and his fellow soldier, who had been bound and left in the corner. Aeliana watched from her mother's bedside as he gestured toward Jasperus, then placed a hand on Brogdon's shoulder. Whatever words he said, managing to bring the ruthless soldier back to tears. Silmar pulled up a chair next to Aeliana.
"Do we need to cut out his brand as well?"
He gestured toward Brogdon. Something about his question felt like another test. It was a decision he would have made in the past, maybe with Jasperus, but now he came to her. "If Mavis is dead, it can't hurt him anymore." He gave a non-committal hum.
"Your mother seems to think Mavis is still alive."
Aeliana turned to look at her mother's pale skin, her lips still mumbling incoherently in her sleep. Her wounds had finally stopped reappearing, allowing her to rest beside Iris. "Then, yes, we should free him, along with anyone else who's branded." Silmar shrugged.
"A brand could be a good way to learn if our enemy returns."
She felt sick over the truth of his words, the reason for his line of questioning, the ease at which he would leave someone at Mavis's whim for the sake of information. The pain of his lies swept through her once more. "And what about you? Are you my enemy?" He sighed, leaning back in his chair and resting his staff over his knees.
"I was at one time. Like Jasperus, I changed my ways, proved my loyalty."
He stretched out his palms.
"Mavis never branded me because we were already bonded."
Aeliana stiffened as she took in his familiar scars. "Bonded? You and Mavis?" Jasperus's explanation of cutting out brands and bonds came back to her. "You cut out your bond mark?" He nodded.
"As well as all the brands Mavis had helped me perform over the years."
He gestured to the rest of the scars on his arms and face. Eliana recoiled at the thought of him having so many brands in so many places. But she supposed he would have matched his bondmate. She imagined Mavis's brand and the pain she'd felt cutting it out, how she'd needed her mother's help. How had he cut out so many? Who had helped him? What changed? Why did you cut them all out? Silmar hesitated.
I thought it was Mavis who changed. But I suppose it was me. She'd always had a strange obsession with the stars. She didn't worship them like the witches. Not that I'm comparing your worship to the witches.
He glanced at Cyrus through the open door, where the priest in training was already saying prayers over Jasperus's body and preparing him to return to the stars.
Mavis worshipped them as something to aspire to or obtain. She wanted to be a star.
And you didn't see that as a problem from the beginning? He scowled.
Bonds play tricks on your mind and your heart. They make you overlook faults in your bondmate, when maybe those things should be seen.
Eliana scanned the room for Lukai, whose head was bent with Velden. The two men gestured wildly back at the tower stairs, Lukai eager to leave the tower and search for the others, while Velden wasn't ready to move the patients. Garen joined in on the conversation, hopefully to find some sort of compromise.
So what made you turn on her?
He flinched, making Eliana realize that even after all these years, he harbored guilt over the decision. Guilt bred by the bond he'd once shared with Mavis.
She wanted you, he said. I knew she wanted your mother's magic. Emerus was the prize she patiently waited for. But you were the prize she hadn't anticipated. When her spies told her of your magic, she became obsessed, refused to wait until you were grown.
Goosebumps rose on Eliana's arms, and the memories Garen had shown her came back. The daisies she'd grown as a toddler. Children aren't supposed to have magic.
And yet, you did.
Silmar blinked, his eyes suspiciously wet.
I don't know why. I'm not sure anyone knows. But it made you her target. Suddenly, I saw each of her brands, each of my brands, as individuals. People who were once children like you. People who had parents who loved them. Families who needed them.
He cleared his throat and looked away. Eliana couldn't help smiling. There is a soft side to you. He shrugged.
It wasn't right. And when I cut out my bond, I could see it even more clearly. It wasn't just that I couldn't be a part of it. I had to put a stop to it.
His lips pursed, and Eliana knew she wouldn't get anything more out of him. But it had been enough. If Durakin didn't put a stop to her, we'll find another way, she said. He nodded.
As long as you and your mother let me stay on, I'll help you rebuild. Not just this tower, but this group of people. Hundreds are probably waking up just like Brogdon did. Your people will all be broken.
Her breath hitched. My people. I thought we agreed that I wasn't fit to rule. He grunted and shook his head. But before he could argue, shouts came from the tower stairs. Everyone turned, but Garen shouted back,
Riverin?
Another indecipherable yell carried through the stone hall, and Garen took off running.
Chapter 88. Garen ran for the hall where he and Silmar had cut off the others. He'd assumed the worst for his men, but that shout had sounded distinctly like Riverin. The stones were still there, blocking off the spiral stairway, but voices sounded on the other side, and light peeked through the upper left corner of the doorway.
Garen?
The deep, muffled tone was like the song of the stars to Garen's ears.
Yes, it's me!
Garen crawled up on the rubble, pulling at loose stones and finding leverage for some of the bigger ones.
How are you still alive?
Always a good question.
A laugh bubbled up in Garen's throat.
Who else is with you?
Lukai and Veldin joined him, pawing at the highest rocks until Riverin's shaved head could be seen. Garen reached out to rub it, and Riverin gasped, adjusting to peer over the stones at Garen.
I have Larkos and Thalahan here.
His eyes clouded over.
Breve is here too, but he didn't make it.
Garen's joy deflated. The fourth generation sailor hadn't lived to bring about a fifth generation. Images of the younger man's apron-clad mother and laughing siblings rushed through his mind. He never should have let Breve come.
He took after his father,
Riverin said, his voice cracking.
He's a war hero, and his mama's going to hear exactly how brave he was.
Garen nodded.
And she'll be getting a nice lump sum from the treasury.
He cut off, realizing that was no longer a promise he could make.
Maybe your family will take you back,
Riverin said.
They'll have to see that Mavis was wrong, that they were wrong to ally with her.
Garen shook his head.
Enla would have already seen this outcome. Even if it was one of many, she couldn't have ignored Mavis's depravity in it. She knew. I still can't go home.
He didn't bother mentioning the blood magic he'd done. He'd tell Riverin eventually, but not here and not now.
Well, we'll find a way to take care of Breve's mother,
Riverin said. Garen nodded.
Aura and some of the others were down there too,
Riverin said.
She did something. Something that saved us all. But she's weak.
The concern in his voice made Garen work faster at the rubble, until finally Riverin could get through. When Garen's old friend pulled him in for a hug, all the fears he'd had pent up for the last few weeks came out in a death grip, punctuated by a shuddering, dry sob.
I forgot what saps you two are.
Larkos gazed at them from the stairway, his arms resting on the half-wall that still remained.
Now get over here. I'm a lot fatter than Riverin, and I'm not gonna fit through this tiny hole.
Despite his complaining, Larkos let Thalahan go through first, probably on account of the younger sailor's left eye being matted closed with blood. More blood oozed from the wound as he crossed the threshold, and Garen suspected the eye was lost. Hopefully, his bride would consider an eye patch roguishly handsome. Next, Larkos passed Breve's body through, and Garen carefully carried it out to the balcony. Cyrus still kneeled by Jasperus, hands raised to the stars. Garen didn't understand Cyrus's faith, but he couldn't deny that it was the stars who would come and burn up Jasperus's body, returning his starlock to the heavens. Calling on them for aid at this time wasn't a terrible idea. I know Breve isn't a progeny, Garen said as he laid Breve next to Jasperus. But I think he would have liked knowing he had a progeny's funeral pyre. Cyrus's lips lifted in a sad smile.
Hundreds will be gathered up by the stars tonight. Maybe not their bodies like the progeny's, but in spirit. It's an honor either way.
Garen nodded.
Do you mind praying for him as well? I'll pray, but he doesn't really need our prayers anymore. He's with the stars.
He inclined his head toward Garen.
Or the sun. Either way, when I pray over the dead, it's for all the lives they've touched, all the people left behind.
The lump returned in Garen's throat as he thought of Breve's family. Even better. When Garen returned to the hall, they'd gotten Larkos out along with Kendallin, and they were in the process of passing Aura's unconscious form through. Garen took her to the settee in Mavis's main room, where Daisy immediately fussed over her. Seeing Aura reminded Garen of their secondary objective. "Did anyone find the golden arrow?" he asked. Daisy remained bent over Aura, her hands assessing for wounds to heal, but she shook her head. "I don't think anyone's had the time to look." By the time Garen made it back to the hall, Holm and Marnock had made it through, informing everyone that the only things left on the stairs were corpses and the fading howls of the Winnex, who would hopefully give up scratching at the door with the sun's morn. "So much for a truce with the Winnex," Kendallin muttered as they all gathered in Mavis's main room. "We can't expect a complete turnaround in one generation," Daisy said. "At least not in one of their generations. Maybe within ours." Velden and Holm began exchanging stories of what had happened on the balcony and the staircase, while others gave in to their need for sleep, curling up on the floor or simply sitting against a wall and leaning on each other. Cyrus finally joined them, shutting the door on the balcony and the horrors they would have to face in the morning. Garen knew he should sleep, but first he made a quick search of the room, only pausing in surprise to catch Holmes' retelling of Aura's significant use of magic. He eyed the woman still lying unconscious on the settee, her pale face looking close to death. In spite of all her secrets, he felt confident she was the only one who was meant to find the Starbridges. A wave of curiosity rushed through him, but it wasn't the same level of desire he'd once had. The Starbridges didn't hold the same appeal, but he would still seek them out for her.
"Try the loose stone behind the bed," Silmar said, his eyes barely open as he watched from the corner.
Garen hesitated, but Silmar wasn't one to joke around. It took three of them to move the bed with Emerus and Iris on it, but once they did, the stone Silmar spoke of became obvious. Garen worked his fingers into the gap, sliding the stone out until it revealed a barrel-sized gap behind the stone. At first it seemed empty, but when Garen reached down, his fingers brushed warm metal that hummed. Behind him, Aura murmured, stirring on the settee. Garen pulled a golden arrow out and held it up for everyone to see. The ancient words etched on its side glimmered in the lantern's light, drawing the others around him in a tight circle. Cyrus whispered the foreign words as he leaned over Garen's shoulder.
"What does it mean?"
Garen asked, passing it over to Daisy. Cyrus hesitated.
"I was never very good at the old language."
"Divided in war, united in hope, reconciled in love."
Aura's voice rang through the room with surprising strength, drawing everyone's gaze. She was sitting on the settee, stroking the braid on her wrist, her face a sickly gray. Her clear eyes focused on the golden arrow.
"Its pull is so much stronger when Eliana holds it."
Daisy frowned thoughtfully.
"But nothing is ever just one thing. Back in the Stargazer, you said something else. Separated by strife, merged by faith, and..."
She trailed off, her brow furrowing.
"Restored by sacrifice," Aura finished.
"I still don't know what it means," Garen said.
"Perhaps you're not meant to."
Aura's words came out on a grunt as she attempted to stand, and Garen rushed forward to help her. Cold hands pressed into his arms as she leaned into him, practically pushing him toward the balcony.
"Hurry, there's not much time."
"Time for what?" he asked.
"I need to be on the balcony, and you need to stay here," she whispered. "The stars are coming."
Garen paused.
"It's not safe to be out there. We all need to stay inside."
"That's what I just said."
Aura stepped away from him, holding on to the door leading out to the balcony, her breath coming in gasps as she pulled it open with both hands.
"Stay here."
Her body was still too frail for Garen's liking, but she held up a hand to ward him off when he approached.
"No one else come out until morning."
Then she shut the door behind her.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this first installment of Blood of the Stars by Corinne Norton. To get reminders for new episodes and to stay up to date with my books, be sure to sign up for my newsletter at corinnenorton.com. You'll also get the prequel short story to Blood of the Stars in ebook and audio for free. Thanks so much for listening.